The sort of muddled question at the beginning was, when you design, when you write a game, what did you find out in terms of trying to translate your intent onto someone? Like with WandaVision, when I... It's always mixing questions, but...
Don't worry.
I'm the one rambling. But what I find fascinating with games, which I realized with a game like Masks, A New Generation, you know, playing superheroes for a long time, I thought was something very difficult to go do with role-playing game, because the approach, the traditional approach, was to quantify stuff. And to balance things.
Yeah.
Say, okay, Batman is not as strong as Superman, but they got the same pool of points, and it's much smarter, and it's got more resources, and so on. And Mask was really, for me, the game who said, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What matters is it's narrative levers, and then you skin super strength or a heartbreaking, snarky remark, but the narrative effect is the same. So yeah, with WandaVision, with your game, what's your... Or to talk about something which is released, like
Fatality Force.
Fatality Force.
Yeah.
Okay, so I saw Suicide Squad yesterday.
Okay.
So when you come out of Suicide Squad and you want to do Fatality Force...
Yeah.
What's the thing you want? What do you want to do? You want to do the fights? You want to do the having characters getting killed?
The absolute, like, starting point for me after seeing the film was... I want to feel like someone using their power. I want to have that feeling of being Polka Dot Man, like spilling out the polka dots and stuff from himself. And I think it happened, like, I was cycling home afterwards, which gave me just like some time to kind of like just slowly process things.
That sounds dangerous.
just like intensely playing out all this big stuff while cycling.
Whee! Starfish is moving around! On the second superhighway on my Boris bike.
I was basically like, in my brain kind of did like a superimposition, a mapping of Polka Dot Man's dots and someone throwing dice.
Mm-hmm.
Of just like, if throwing dice could feel more like...
Oh, the physicality.
Pow! Yeah, it basically came from that kind of place. And I was like, I want to feel that, like, that intense, and like I'm doing something.
But what's tough, especially with Suicide Squad, where you got King Shark, you got Harley Quinn, you got Polka Dot Man, is you describe Polka Dot Man doing that thing, but then the next character is doing something entirely different.
Yeah. That is basically where the entire game kind of came from, because then I was like, okay, well, what if one person is rolling dice to figure out whether they've done something or not, and someone is drawing cards, and someone else is drawing straws, and someone else is guessing whether the number of minutes past the hour is odd or even. And I basically, like, it started with just drawing up 9 different ways that someone could just get a random 50-50 success-failure result.
Oh,
but
nice.
Different mechanics of that. And then it became like, okay, well... it was partially like me just also giving myself the challenge of don't overthink things. Just do the thing, don't overthink. So it's like, okay, I've got someone who is pulling like different colored dice from a bag. Like if you take 2 sets of dice, put them in a bag, you pull out the black dice, you've been unsuccessful. You pull out a white dice, you've been successful. I was like, okay, so how is that someone's power? And I was like, oh, they have a universe of marble-sized planets in a bag, and their villain name is Planet Master, and that's their thing. And then, oh, there's someone guessing the time, whether it's like odd minutes or even minutes. Right, they're called Clock Keeper.
I love them. All the names stuff listed on the cover. They're just so evocative.
That felt like that felt cool. That felt nice. I think it's also because, like, there are some games I've seen where I haven't done much work with designers yet. Partially because, like, stuff like Fatality Force, I was like, I just want to get this out before the film's out in the US. That just feels like the best thing to do is make sure it exists when it gets released there. But there are games like 10 Million HP Planet where the design is just so cool, and it's so evocative, and it immediately brings up like pulpy fun. And I think that was one of the things that I was thinking of there.
That's a nice constraint also, you know, a deadline, because
I was talking about
the Gauntlet. There are so many very talented game designers, people who are way more talented than I will ever be, I think. But I see a few of them who are we keep tinkering the same thing, and it's kind of never ending. At some point you're like, come on, I really want to play that game we played, you described to me, and you can spend 10 years perfecting it, but actually I want to be out and do another version about something else later on, but release it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's hard. Like, I have things like the WandaVision game that I had the initial idea in January, and I'm still trying to redraft and then probably do like one more playtest. But if there are some that I can just like get out of my brain, that's kind of how I think of it. I'm just like, I need to get you out of my brain so you're not taking up space in my brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what you were saying about like, did I want to kind of do the combat or being the character or something? It was very much like, the types of play are divided into, there's like three types of play, and you just shuffle around those kind of scenes to create the story. And one is like massive combat, just like ridiculously big combat, which is like you were kind of saying with Mars, like it's not quantified. Like you have a bag of planets, and I've given you like three things you can technically do with the planets, but I've also said in like the GM notes, you're telling like a very silly story. Like no one should have, no, like use your common sense as to what is fun and what is like cinematic and dramatic, but I'm not quantifying things more than just like this success failure thing. But there's like big combat, there is kind of strategic heist stuff, so that you can do the thing of where like your backs are against the wall and you're like looking around doors, but you're like sniping at each other from across the doorway doing like cracking wise. And then there's just like characterful downtime where it's just like you're all kind of, you know, fixing your weapons or nursing your wounds or having a drink in the rubbles of a fight or something. Because I think I was like, those are the three things that I really want from like trying to emulate that kind of experience. So it's just like very straightforward, like characterful downtime, big combat, this thing, which also came from just the don't overthink it, just do it kind of experiment with this game. Because it is, yeah, it's very easy to like write and rewrite and rewrite and want everything to be absolutely perfect, whatever the hell that looks like. Yeah.
Reminds me of a teacher in architecture school who was teaching to sketch. And I think one important lesson he taught us, what he taught me was, it's very important when you decide to stop, throw.
Yeah.
And yeah, because you can ruin a sketch because you took it too far. At some point you're like, okay, I just leave it there. And it's nice now. If I had details, if I did this, if I tried to do this thing, I'm going to meddle. The qualities are, I sort of managed to come up with this thing.
And I think, especially because like with games and stuff, the game is a part of it, but it doesn't like exist as a game until people are playing it, and so you need to leave the space for them to exist in it and them to be playing it. But yeah, I totally get you on you can overdo it.
If I
So have you heard from people playing Fatality Force yet?
Not yet. I know some people who've bought it, who are arranging games, and I'm sure I will hear from them. I've heard from people, I mean, like, again, it might be like, there's a clear bias here. People have primarily got in touch with me about games when they've enjoyed playing my games. So I've heard primarily nice things. Like, I've
heard, it's nice to hear things, because often,
oh God, yeah, it's
so many
best.
Things you do, you never hear back.
Exactly, like, it gets said a lot, but it really is true. Like, if you've enjoyed a thing that someone's made, tell them.
Oh, yes, please.
Oh my God, tell them.
Can be a podcast, by the way. You can do it on iTunes, just saying.
Yeah, I got some tweets the other night about people playing the Andromeda Ward, which is basically Garth Marenghi, but a game. Again, another thing where I was like, I just want a game of this thing. Saying really nice things, and they had like a really funny, like hilarious time, which was awesome. And like, I got some nice, what was really interesting was someone like shared like the notes that they'd made or the prep that they'd done for a game of Time Heist that they played, because Time Heist is very, roll 3 dice to find out like what is on this island and who is there and how they get there, and then just go. And then like, there are some other dice roll things that will give you things to work off of, because basically it's like, oh, you've invoked a future self, right, roll, oh okay, they're holding a birthday cake and they have a dog with them, and that kind of gives you, okay, so at some point between now and your future self appearing, they get a cake and a dog comes into play.
Sounds very Dirk Gently, the first season
bit.
When they got the outfit,
yeah.
The big fur coat.
It's a bit like that, but it's very, because I'm very content doing very freeform, like as in low prep, very improvised one shots and things like that as a GM, and so a lot of the games that I make kind of lean into that. And it was really interesting seeing someone be like, I don't normally do this stuff, this is a bit out of my comfort zone, here are my notes. And it was really cool because like, they'd drawn a map of the island and they had like lists at the side of all these different things that had come up, and they had like reference pictures and stuff at the top. And that was really interesting because it was, and I'd heard that from a couple of other people who'd played it, where they'd prepped quite a lot more than I would like ever prep during one of those games. That was really interesting. I think that might be one of the reasons why, like, because Fatality Force, equally, it has the standard concept of you're supervillains, your heads will blow up if you defect, and you've got to go destroy a superweapon. And there's, like, 4 different options of the ultimate superweapon, and I've actually built in a lot more. There's a whole page which is just, like, if you want a structure to play through, here is a structure of, like, combat strategy and downtime scenes with some samples of what those could be, so that it doesn't feel quite so open. And I don't know if I would have put quite so much detail in terms of his example structure. If you don't want it, don't use it, but if you need something like that, go for it. I don't know if I would have done that had I not been aware of other people like trying out some other of my games and still enjoying it, but it being much more like improv led than they were previously comfortable with.
I think you missed a commercial opportunity here, because if you were a sound capitalist, what would you have said? Okay, this is Fatality Force. If you want to structure the game, it's another game called Time Heist. You can play Time Heist Fatality Force.
I'm a terrible capitalist. I'm a terrible capitalist. I'm not a good.
Well, you do the hustle. You monetize all your hobbies.
I monetize them, but I don't. I feel like I'm not very good at being a business person. I'll say that much. Like, I love making games, and it's a delight when people buy them, and sometimes I will do something that's a bit strategic, like I've got to cut out this Suicide Squad, it's my thing when it comes out in America. But I'm not as, yeah, I don't think I'm as good in terms of like marketing, publicizing, constantly doing the hustle. I think also because it's
stuff, huh?
Yeah, and it's also keeping that up when, like, because all my work is freelance, whether that's like theatre stuff, whether it's like game design for live events and things that aren't really tabletop but are different kinds of games, or whether it's tabletop stuff. When everything you do is freelance, it's often really hard just to like keep on top of that stuff and like constantly be like pushing and promoting or hustling or like structuring your business or doing those things. And that is one of the things where I'm just like, I see some people and I'm like, I respect how good you are at just like the business side of things, because my brain isn't naturally like that, and I haven't yet had like the capacity or energy to properly learn any of that.
Well, I find the challenge is, I mean, first of all, you need to find people who are really good at something you want to delegate them to. Second, you need to have the resources to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And because it's such a small industry, and we all sort of separated in all corners, this, I mean, such a huge difference as soon as you can, you've got the critical mass of of whatever, money, followers, to suddenly have someone who say, okay, I'm gonna moderate / animate your Discord, or I'm gonna retweet or tweet stuff for you, or I'm gonna like with the podcast at the moment, I'm exhausted just putting stuff up online, you know, not even editing them, but just, then I need to post them on Patreon, then I need to post them on that platform, this other platform, and then I need to promote them on the dozen. So as soon as you got one additional person, or your little team, I mean, you did a game with Grant.
Yeah.
They got a nice team at Rook and Deckard.
Yeah.
With people managing the Kickstarters, someone managing the game design, and even within the game design, well, this person is more rules, this one is more another aspect of this. So you're very lucky when you find people you can work together with and can afford to. It's really, really tough, I find.
Yeah. And that's something where it's like, theatre-wise and maybe actual play-wise, I'm like totally spoiled for choice because I know so many incredible people. And it was really cool doing the collaboration with Grant because I haven't done much game writing with other people. And even there, it's just like, oh, there's another person who is not like necessarily putting down hard deadlines, but I feel like there's another person who can help. We can collaboratively keep things in check rather than just me do my own thing.
So the game is Clue Don't.
Yes.
And it's a one-page game, right?
Yes.
That sounds like a very tight space for two people.
Oh, God, it is. Yeah, I mean, thank God for Grant's experience there, because fitting something on one page is not something that I have done. It's not something that, like, the stuff that I do,
so
kind of...
Fertility Force is 8 pages long?
It's 16.
16.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. It's 16. I mean, it's like, it's not tiny font.
Okay.
And some of that is like big titles, but yeah, because
you
know, it's...
I think I already told you online, I'm considering, I mean, if you would allow me to translate it to French,
absolutely.
16 pages, it's...
Yeah, I'm aware it's like that's because like, I mean four of those are characters alone, are just like character options. But yeah, thankfully like Grant knows how to identify the absolutely essential things to make something fundamentally function.
I mean, at the same time, 16 pages, I think the actual rules of my game is 12 pages. I personally find it's a nice balance, you know.
Yeah.
It's a complete game, and at the same time, it's not starting to make rules for vertical and horizontal jump and a bunch of stuff where like you're actually not using that. I mean that's my little rant for a number of games, is that there's a lot of games, there's a lot of rules in them which you don't actually use, so I personally find to some extent it's objectively useless to be enamored with this way of doing things when you don't actually use it.
Exactly.
But Clue don't, sorry.
Yeah.
So how did it happen? Where was the starting point for that?
The starting point, I went round to Grant's, since we're both like London based, and went round to his just for like drinks and pizza. And firstly, we were chatting for a while about anything, everything, because I didn't realise that Grant has done a lot of stuff in like live kind of gaming and stuff that's similar to like some of the street gaming that I've worked on, and like we have weird crossovers of theatre people that we've worked with, and obviously he went to UVA and I grew up in Norwich, so it was like weird kind of like, oh, you know, Norwich stuff. And then I think it started, we were talking about stuff like how Jenga is used for stuff like Dread or Wretched and Alone and things like that, and I was like, is it just like a weird branding thing, or is it a availability thing that Kaplunk isn't used? So I don't know if you know Kaplunk. It might be like a very British thing. I don't know if that's why.
I don't know.
So Kaplunk is, it's like a plastic game where basically you have this kind of huge ball on like a podium and you put loads of sticks into.
You have
the marbles, okay. Yeah, and you pull them out.
I don't
out.
Know the French name, but
that,
like those 80s game you played twice. Like Angry Hippo and all this stuff. Or the donkey with the
load. Oh, Buckaroo.
Or the pirate with
the barrel.
You can do games with all of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, because we were talking about Kaplunk and being like, why is that not a thing? And then, like, I was chatting about how I made, like, a very short narrative hack of Buckaroo, where it's like, here's how to do a Western epic, but you're playing Buckaroo. And we were talking about stuff like that, and then talking about, like, because there's an immersive monopoly that's opened up in the middle of London.
Oh.
I know. We don't let's start about that. But it came up.
That's monopoly. I just went to the London Docklands Museum.
Oh, right.
And there's a whole section which is, I mean, it's a community project. Apparently it worked well, but they made a East London monopoly. A community project involving local communities picking up which street, what element should be featured in it. And on one hand, it's nice, it's a community project. And on the other hand, I was like, why Monopoly? That's so dry and terrible.
Yeah, I mean, like, my house growing up, we had Standard Monopoly, we had Simpsons Monopoly, I think.
Chocolate Monopoly, is still in the box right
now. Oh, God. We also had my parents' anniversary Monopoly, because my mum used, like, the Make Your Own Opoly website.
No.
And so, like, me and my brothers are, like, I think, train stations.
We got Belgian Monopoly, because each country's got it.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah, and Gran and I ended up talking a lot about board games, and a lot about, like, okay, what if you were playing Monopoly, but you've got to be, like, someone who transformed into a giant hat that can smash down walls and buildings and stuff like that. And then we were like, oh, what about Cluedo? What if it was just like you were having to prove that you were the murderer rather than prove that you were innocent? Partially because, like, I think we were also talking about, you know, there's so many murder mystery things I love, like Knives Out and Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle was a book I was reading at the time that has, like, a lot of, like, time loops and figure and, like, weird inversions of murder mystery stuff. And basically, we then got to the point of, like, oh, yeah, what if, because I mentioned that in Parks and Rec, Ron Swanson's will says, all my money goes to the person who kills me. And I was like, what if that obtains? And therefore, you need to prove that you're the person who killed them. So that's kind of the point where it came from, was just like an interest in how board games can get used for role-playing experiences.
It's funny because when you think of it, so first of all, board games, most board games are one page. They're rules.
There's just like a very straightforward concept.
Your standard MB Ravensburger, it's a one page because you don't expect the family to read more than that. And when you figure, you know, we were talking about framework and culture, how, okay, this is, like, I like D&D 4th edition. It's tactical and so on. I can like very different things, but you still roleplay that.
Yeah.
You still role play the fight, although it's very tactical and so on. So why, and I remember playing Zombie Seed Black Death once, and sort of role playing the characters, but not too much, but why don't you role play Clue as it is?
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, it's well known within a lot of my friends that put any game in front of me and I will turn it into a role playing game. I've played many a game of, like, Love Letter, where we have all, you know, enacted how well we're spoken of at breakfast the next morning and really, like, role-played it. But yeah, it's an odd one, because I think, like, there are games like Cluedo where if you're playing with the right people, you will end up just, like, kind of role-playing that stuff. But it's not built in there.
But do you think it's built...
That's not explicit.
No, but it's funny, I'm trying to wonder, I'd be curious to compare some role-playing games and some board games and find out if it's just an agreement of the people before showing up, because there's a stamp on the thing saying it's a story game or a role-playing game versus a board game, if there are actual things in the rules. Because some role-playing games, I'm not sure it says, now you role-play.
So
I'd be curious to take some rules and have people who not know them say, okay, guess which one is a board game and which one is a tabletop game. And I wonder if there's some cases somewhere you'd be like, I actually don't know if it's
that would be really interesting
thing.
Like, I, because I mean, I recently, I think the last board game that I bought, because I was just like wandering through Waterstones and saw it and I was like, okay, I'll go for it, was
Monopoly.
Well, actually, yeah, technically last board game I bought was Cluedo, because we had copies to practice with. But before then, it was, I think it's called Dice Out of Time, which is a Back to the Future Ravensburger board game. And when you open it up, the first thing you see is a letter from Doc Brown asking for your help. And it's like the underside of part of the board. But it's a very, like, it's an in-world message from Doc, which immediately feels like such a role-playing prompt, which is really interesting. I mean, then you go through it and there isn't technically much else that I think prompts specific role play. Like, you're still technically being a person who is traveling throughout time in your little, one of your four coloured DeLoreans, and if you land on this square with Biff in there, then you're getting punched in the face and you'll go to a different square and stuff. But like, that was quite interesting, as just the initial, like, the opening thing as you open the box is a very role play inspiring thing. And yeah, I think that'd be very interesting to see how different board games pitch their rules. Because what you're saying about, like, is it an agreement of the people before playing? Kind of, like, with a lot of friends that I have, or, like, if we are playing games together, it's almost kind of implied. Like, we know where this is going. Even if we're playing something like, just like a basic card game like Bandito, we will make up the backstory of the person who is trapped and why we're trying to stop them escaping and why we're doing all this stuff.
I'd be just curious to set up a couple of fake playtests. You just you pick a few board games.
Yeah.
You find the serial numbers. You call them something else. You bring friends together. Okay, we're going to play test. It's a bit rules heavy, but I'm developing this game and the premise is that we're going to have this videotape. You know, if you could manipulate people into roleplay board game, because in the end of the day it's a convention more than something in the text of the rules.
Yeah, I guess I, like, maybe this is going a bit too deep with it, but I think there's also kind of a weird thing of when you play, say you play a game like Monopoly, it's almost expected. For instance, if I was playing a game of Monopoly when I was younger, my brother would buy everything that he landed on and would probably win and would be acting like some kind of... He wouldn't be role-playing it, but it would create this image of him as, like, some property mogul. You know, my nan would have no idea what was going on and would just be very nice, but wouldn't make any headway. And, like, the classic kind of Monopoly thing is you play for 3 hours, you don't finish, someone throws a tantrum, flips the board, and walks off. And I wonder if there's, like, a weird thing of, like... My brain is now going to, is there a LARP, which is you all go and play Monopoly, but you just play the kind of stereotypes that people have when they play a game like Monopoly. Like,
so
you're all back for a family reunion and you're just like, there's like weird tensions, or you just have these things. Could you just, because some board games have those those kind of types that people fall into, or those rituals, or those, oh, yeah, those standards. I wonder if there's something in there with some games would be like an interesting thing to explore.
And the X-Card, you flip the board. The game
yeah.
is over.
Yeah.
Is there
yeah.
something you want to add before we go into the traditional closing question?
Oh my god. It was something you briefly mentioned earlier, like before we start recording, that I'm having a very nice day today, and I was tweeting this morning about just like being very grateful for having a lot of very lovely supportive people around me, and a lot of those are tabletop role playing people around me, and that's not always been the case, as like a lot of people have experienced that, you know, it's not 100% lovely. But yeah, just flagging that I'm, you know, super grateful for the people that I've been able to like collaborate with recently, the people that I get to work with right now, the people I get to play with, getting to play with them in person, also beautiful. But yeah, just, I don't know, just a random nod to good vibes, I guess. Other than that, I don't know if there's anything kind of to mention. This has just been like
it's a big thing.
Yeah.
It's quite a big thing.
It's nice, because like, it is one of those things, I think also, like I was saying earlier, sometimes you treat something as an essential or an inalienable part of gaming, because it's just been there since you got involved in gaming. And that was definitely a thing for me of, you know, a lot of study realizations of, oh, I don't, it's not necessary to feel this stressed, or for these decisions to go this way, or for this thing to happen, or for the GM player dynamic to be like this. That's actually just something that has happened to obtain for everything so far, but actually doesn't have to. And oh my god, what a lovely new experience having with all these people and without these things obtaining. And so that's just had, especially like over recent months and stuff, has had a really big impact and been really, really lovely.
Yeah, I'm wondering to some extent, I mean, it might be a coincidence, but it feels like with the pandemic, a lot of people found each other's. I don't know, it's just, I'm wondering if it's, you know, people were to some extent going through the motion of hanging out with the same people, and the pandemic created a break, and then they went online, and the most lucky for not only people online who were like-minded and supportive, but might also happen to be in the area, and they might have been there for a long time, but there's a couple of people like that that I've met, interacted a bit more, who happen to be in London. It's just we never took advantage of that because of of work, because you got plans with other friends, which were awesome, but yeah, we were not so available for new experiences.
Yeah, I think there's definitely truth in that. Like, there's been some really lovely new friends that I've made during the pandemic, and I think probably if my life was going exactly how it was beforehand, that might not have happened, or they might not have, like, those friendships might have not developed as much as they had. And yeah, what you say about it being a break, because for me it's been that thing of very much changing who is new to your life and who is still in your life, or who leaves your life. And I think the pandemic, I mean, for me also, like, it really, with live performance disappearing overnight, and suddenly, like, the way that I could make money was by, you know, using my streaming skills, or suddenly getting more into game design and working a lot more on, like, tabletop or on live event game design. And it really, like, shifted a lot in terms of the projects I was focusing on, the work I was doing, the people I was seeing. But thankfully, those have all been good, positive changes for me. But yeah, there are a lot of ways in which I think it's changed how people are able to maintain and have relationships and friendships. Hopefully, in positive ways. Been my experience, but I know it's a difficult thing.
None of us is saying that the pandemic was a good thing, not at all. We're just trying to see some kind of silver lining and build on that. You know, whatever happens now, you try to go even further into the positive.
When I was a little kid, wanted to be big, but now I'm grown and all alone. As I'm going through this business, is this really worth it? Not perfect, nervous on the inside, but look so calm up on the surface. The earth is almost dead, and they say that music's dying. If you do this for a living, tell me what's the use in trying? Lying in my bed, trying to figure out the thoughts up in my head. Hearing what I say, get lost in what I said. Heading down the wrong path, trying to find the right one. Moving through the darkness, hoping that the light comes. I like some, but hate more. Got everything I need right now, so there's really nothing left to wait for. Now I'm kinda grown and I wanna be alone, but I can't cause it's loud and it's crowded in my home. In the zone working, thinking so hard it got my dome hurting. Sometimes it's hard to be your own person, cursing when I'm mad and I'm crying when I'm sad. These dudes are flying on the plane while I'm riding in the cab, or they riding in the Jag, or they sitting in the Benz. I'm just trying to make some ends while I'm spitting with my friends. Yes, there's enough out there for all of us. We can get it together, you know what I mean? We gotta stay together through whatever. Yeah. Sticking to the end, cause I've been in it from the start. You see, I write it in my head, but I spit it from the heart. Wish I wasn't smart, because ignorance is bliss. I guess I'm talking to myself, no one is listening to this. Wishing you would shift, but you stuck in the same gear. The game's lame, change lanes, the reason I came here. The same gear from yesterday, the rest can play, I keep it real. That's the deal, the way I feel, there's nothing really left to say.
When there's nothing left to say, and there's nothing left to do. When you're stuck up in the lane, and you haven't got a clue. I'm here to pick your brain, I'ma change your point of view. Cause the game is all the same, I'ma give you something new. Something new, something new, something new, something new, something new, something new. I'ma give you something new. I'm here to pick your brain, I'ma change your point of view. Cause the game is all the same, I'ma give you something new. When there's nothing left to say, and there's nothing left to do. When you're stuck up in the lane, and you haven't got a clue. I'm here to pick your brain, I'ma change your point of view. Cause the game is all the same, I'ma give you something new. Something new, something new, something new, something new, something new, something new. I'ma give you something new. I'm here to pick your brain, I'ma change your point of view. You, cause the game is all the same, I'ma give you something new.
Extra Lover.
The League Crew.
Terry Urban.
Commissioner.
Boogie.
You feel better that you finished the mixtape?
Yeah, I mean...
So future, present, the traditional question is homage. I'm not stealing an idea, I'm paying tribute to another show called The Weekly Planet. Our final question is, what are you reading? What are you gonna read? It doesn't have to be a book. I see your panicked expression. It could have been like my, and I'm gonna tell my, for instance, my, what am I reading? What am I reading is just, I just saw Suicide Squad.
Oh, I see.
So it doesn't have to be a book. Actually, my last few guests told about books and they put me to shame because I'm not reading. At the moment. So, okay.
So
what are you reading at the moment?
What am I reading at the moment? I'm really blanking because I haven't read any fiction since the book I mentioned earlier, The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle.
It's funny, I just realized something. You said that you wanted your game to be out before Suicide Squad was out. In the US, that means you designed your game before seeing Suicide Squad.
Oh no, it came out a week earlier in the UK. So I saw it on...
Oh wow.
I saw it on Sunday and got it out by Friday.
It's funny because the podcast I mentioned, the Australian one, Suicide Squad came out a week later than the US.
I'm not so cocky as to like, I'm going to design a Suicide Squad game before I've seen
based
the film.
Based on the trailer.
But in terms of what I'm reading, I've ordered a book. I haven't yet read it. I think it's called What White People Can Do Next, because I want to find out more things that I can do positively, and that looks like a very good book, and it became very well recommended. I mean, like, I'm reading a lot of, to be honest, TTRPG like books, games, etc., because I had a lot of things recommended to me recently because I was going, I think it's called Necronautilus.
Whoa, never heard of
I
this
think,
one.
Oh god, I hope I've said that right. You play... It's like you're in the domain of death.
Yeah.
And you're kind of working for death in the world of death. And it's like the design is beautiful. I'm slowly kind of getting to grips with that because I was reading that. Escape from Dino Island, which is just like, it does what it says on the tin. It's really fun, and I'm just looking for like new short games.
I need to send you a copy of my game then.
Yes, absolutely. To be honest, I'm looking at reading Gun and Slinger, just because I recently saw a Twitter thread on it, and it was showing off like how beautiful the book is, but also some of the things it mentioned about the world of it really sounded like the kind of thing that I'm into. So yeah, I always feel like I should be reading some stuff that isn't tabletop role-playing games.
It's fine. I'm terrible at reading role-playing games. Actually, translating games is forcing me to read
more
of them. So they're just one page, but it makes me read them thoroughly. Because I tend to read things. I never trained in speed reading. I'm not a speed reader, but I read things, in French we say diagonally. So I'm like, and that's it. And I process what I process, and then I show up at the table and I use whatever. That's why I don't like big systems, or I'm frustrated by them, because I find
you
don't use much of it. Why a one page I can really remember. So that's forcing me to do that. And actually, I just realized that for once I was reading something today.
Hey.
I started The King in Yellow for my next gaming project, actually. Quite interesting. Weirdly written. There are bits which are very interesting and bits which are like, why just cut that off. And I saw Suicide Squad, which I really, really, really enjoyed. I mean, it's funny, there's a lot of movies recently I've seen, and I was like, that was fun. And then I start thinking of them, and I'm like, this thing doesn't make much sense. Suicide Squad is having the opposite effect to me. The more I reminisce about it, I'm like, that was actually sort of clever or enjoyable, that thing and that other thing. So I'd be curious to have a rewatch.
Yeah.
But what are you gonna read on?
I think I might actually... I keep falling in and out of reading comic books, certain comic books. I'm a big fan of Doom Patrol, but I keep kind of picking it up for like...
The show or the comics?
But I started on the show, and then I started reading the comics and learning about like the Brotherhood of Dada and the Brotherhood of Nada, and just like, it's absolutely my kind of vibe, where it's like, oh, one of the villains is called 50% Chad and it's a massive pair of legs. I am absolutely on board. And so I think, because I need to see how far Saga is, because I've read all of Saga up until like a few months ago.
I fell off of Saga at some point.
Right.
I think I read three, maybe four of them, and then I don't know, I grew tired of it. Okay, not a judgment, but I fell off of it.
That's one of the few ones that I've stuck with. But yeah, I think I want to get a bit more into maybe reading a bit more. Doom Patrol is something on my list.
I actually took a couple, I realized that there's a nice section at my local library in comics, so I got some Moon Knight and Thor, Goddess of Thunder, preparation to Thor, Love and Thunder. So nice. Moon Knight was quite nice. I still have DC Heroes in Crisis, where heroes and villains go into therapy. I've heard it was not as good as the premise, but I look forward to reading that one.
I'm not familiar with those hugely, but Moon Knight is my primary partner's favourite comic book character.
There's a lot of enthusiasm on the internet with different memes. Moon Knight seems memeable.
Oh, I just remembered another thing that I'm going to see as soon as it doesn't come out in the UK until like August the 20th, but it's been on my list. Like, it's on my Trello board of things to do when it's physically possible to do them.
I just got a Google Keep a Trello notes. So
there's a horror film called Censor, like a film censor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's set in the 70s or 80s, and it's about someone who censors video nasties, but reality and film starts to kind of blur a little bit, and it looks really stylistically cool. It's got like a lot of actors in it that I'm into and like seem to always choose good projects, and I'm not always like a big horror person, but it's the right pitch for me, and I like stuff that's like a bit meta and a bit reality kind of bending.
Have you ever seen Thesis?
Tezes.
It's a Spanish movie. About a woman, a young woman. She's at the university and she's doing a paper, a thesis, about snuff movies. And she finds a secret section in the university's library. And it's really down to earth. It's not like, ooh, things become fantastical in any way. But she finds a section which might have snuff movies in the library. And she starts investigating and getting deeper in the thing. And it's about what's happening. Is she really in danger or not? Yeah, it's kind of a classic in
that
the
That sounds really
genre.
Cool. I'll keep an eye out.
One of the very good Spanish horror genre thing. Tonight we've got we've got What If?
Oh!
Coming out. I really liked the What If comics. So the concept of What If, it's Marvel. It's yet another superhero thing, big corporation thing. But the What If comics were moments when Marvel, I think it started with questions, literally in the letter section of old comics.
Oh.
I think so. But the concept is, what if Peter Parker never got the powers of Spider-Man? What if Uncle Ben didn't die? What if? And I know in the What If we should have Zombie Marvel.
Nice.
We should have Peggy Carter being Captain Britain.
Yeah.
Instead of Steve Rogers becoming Captain America, and Steve Rogers ends up being a World War II Iron Man. What if Peter Quill from Guardians of the Galaxy was not the one picked up by Yondu, but it was instead T'Challa, Black Panther,
right,
who went to space? So
that does sound really cool. I'm a bit behind because I haven't even seen Loki yet. Basically, because I was at a bit of a saturation point of time travel stuff in my life, and so I was like, I'm gonna wait, because I was like making games with time travel and reading stuff with time travel and consulting for other people to advise them on time travel.
It's not that heavy on time travel, I told the kids. It's more. It really, really reminded me. It's like, what if Marvel did and they did their own Doctor Who? For me, I'm not a big Doctor Who fan, but for me as a somewhat outsider of the movie fandom, I was like, it really felt pretty much like that. Reminds me a lot of Loki.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I've heard lots of good things. I think I'm just about in a place where I'm like, good to catch up and see Loki.
Great. So you did mention your What Am I Reading already? Gonna read.
Yeah, what am I? Yes.
Okay. So that's it. One final word, and where can people find you when you wish to be found?
That's such a good additional bit when you wish to be found. I've never
That's
heard
that. That's an important bit. Well,
oh God, yeah.
My moment, right?
I'm at Chloe Masheter on Twitter, which is the main place to find me. I'm not on Instagram and those kind of things. Or Roll Flip Draw on YouTube.
TikTok,
like,
you need to get on
that. I'm a person who like has a pay-as-you-go phone, who doesn't have apps on their phone, who doesn't have constant internet on it. I'm just not...
Look, we can do on a phone. We recorded a podcast if that thing doesn't break on me because of heat and
true.
Battery.
But yes, at Chloe Master on Twitter, rollflipdraw.itch.io for games, or rollflipdraw.co.uk for just like games, blogs, etc. And if you go to either of those, there's a mailing list where you don't, like, you won't find me. I will find you. I will throw things your way every month. And if you search for Roll Flip Draw on YouTube, then there's kind of old gaming streams and also like tutorials about making games in Twine and things like that. And hopefully, because I'm a theatre freelancer and life is inconsistent, I'm not doing this at the moment, but hopefully I'll get back to it. Also, Roll Flip Stream on Twitch, where sometimes I will do either gaming streams or I do improvised song streams where people tell me about their tabletop characters and I will sit there with my ukulele and improvise songs and theme tunes to parties.
I picked up the ukulele during the pandemic as well.
I started trying to teach myself like piano during the pandemic. It's just like one of the many things I attempted to do. I think those are all the kind of places you can find me when I want to be found.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me, and thanks people for listening to this month's episode. Listening to the two parts of this episode, or to the second part of this episode. See you next month. I don't know who will be my next guest. And in the meantime,
have good games.
This episode included Stop by Vienna Ditto, Prepare for Revolution by Unknown Artist, Something New by Wildebeest, and of course our theme song Solta of Rango by Bondé de Rol. You can find all these songs for free on the freemusicarchive.org. Our logo is designed by Rolling Kuns, and you can find it on face masks, apparels, notebooks, stickers, magnets, and a bunch of other things on the Rollis T Public Store. So I'm out of stuff which are pre-recorded again. So this is the end of our time recorded with my phone with Chloe Mashiter. I highly recommend you go check out her games. And yep, as you can tell, I'm a bit recovering from an illness, but I should be fit again just in time to attend Dragon Meet next week on December 4th, where I will be as part of the UK Indie League. That will be my first time attending any convention, and what better convention than Dragon Meet, which I consider like a second home for me. That will be the first time I attend any convention ever as a game designer. I will be there selling physical copies of Paris Gondo, The Life-Saving Magic of Inventoring, and that includes not only the books, but also grunge, minimalists, box sets, including the card decks you need to play, some play heads, the tables, like the Gom Paris classification table or the dungeon generator table, and all in a format which allow you to use dry erase pens with them. There's a dry erase pen as part of the box set. There's even pebbles, which you can use with the Spark Joy card. All of that will be available for sale at Dragon Meet on the UK Indie League booth, which will include the excellent people from Black Armada, as well as Biscuit Fun Games, Certain Death Publishing, and Sinister Beard Game. So plenty of excellent indie tabletop role-playing games for you to purchase. And on that, I'm going to go rest. So I am in shape for Dragon Meat. Yeah, I really, really cannot wait to be there. I will even be selling face masks there, by the way. But yeah, I hope to see many of you there. Please take all your precautions as part of attending, mask up, vaccine, all of that, so we can all have a wonderful time together to close our 2021 tabletop RPG convention season, and in my case, open it at the same time I'm closing it. And yeah, so our next episode should be recorded there, so that's what's on the menu for next month. Cheers, bye! Alegria da moçada da perua favelada, nosso som é fantasia pra mamãe, vovó, titia. Rolê, 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 solta o frango e vem com a gente. Rolê, 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 solta o frango e vem com a gente. Nós é tipo bem Jesus, todo mundo a gente ama, ainda mais se for gatinha, rola até levar pra cama. A gente topa tudo, sapatão e bigodudo, na hora do piriri, cai em mim outra travesti.
Vai, batuque!
Rolê, 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 solta o frango e vem com a gente. Rolê, 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 solta o frango e vem com a gente.
I am your singing telegram.